I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. When we think of the fan today, let's try not to think about those three shirtless guys painted green and gold and holding up their beer cups for the TV camera. No, let's think instead of that gray, rainy game in early August when you see the lonely guy in the clear plastic poncho sitting and waiting for his losing team to resume its place on the field. To be a fan is to be devoted. To be a fan of a team like the Boston Red Sox or the Chicago Cubs is to be, well, either very devoted or pathetically masochistic. Connection listeners, what the heck is it about people who continue year after year after year to cheer for the chumps and to stay with the home team? Would it be so wrong to switch sides, choose a team that wins and back them? Wouldn't it be a lot more fun to be a devoted fan of the Yankees or the Lakers instead of this dogged and somewhat determined sticking with the Cubs or the Red Sox? Now don't just call up and say, "Steelers, hoo-ah!" Tell us why it matters to be a fan, even when you're always on the losing side. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Now, today in the program, two sports writers who think about the role of the fan in sports. Joe Queenan writes about sports and culture for just about every magazine and newspaper in America. His latest book is True Believers, The Tragic Inner Life of Sports Fans. Alan Barra writes principally for Slate.com, The Village Voice, and The Wall Street Journal. His book, examining the relations that fans have with the games, called Clearing the Bases, The Greatest Baseball Debates of the Last Century. They're both joining us from the NPR studios in New York. Welcome to The Connection.
Hello.
Hello.
Joe, why don't you start? Of the teams you support, there isn't one that's won a championship in 20 years. Is it a good thing to back losers?
Well, it's not a good thing to back losers, but there really isn't any alternative because people who switch allegiances end up like John Walker Lind. They're bad people. They're Judas Iscariot. They're Iago. They're the scum of the earth. And I'm not saying that jokingly. When I find out that somebody has switched allegiances, when I find out that somebody grew up in Michigan and roots for the Yankees but also roots for the Michigan Wolverines, I refuse to talk to that person anymore. I wouldn't let my children play with the person's children. And if I play basketball with the guy, which I do, I won't pass him the ball.
Okay. Alan?
I think very largely, well, remember, fan is derived from the word fanatic. If you're switching allegiances, I don't see how you can really be a fanatic. You're not really rooting for the team. You're just rooting for a victory. You want to associate with the team that wins.
But what if your company moves you from Detroit to Chicago? I mean,
well, if you're a kid and you grow up in a different part of the country, that's something else. I can see a kid having a different allegiance than his father. But that's, of course, something as Americans we have to deal with because we move so darn much, don't we?
You know, one thing that you have to remember about this is that it's not just about winning. It's about your team winning, because basically what you're doing when you're following a team is you want, for one day, you want everything to be perfect. When your team wins, it's perfect. So to switch to the Lakers or to the Yankees, they've already won. The Yankees have won 26 times. So if they win again, jumping on the bandwagon wouldn't do anything for me, because I don't necessarily want to be on the winning side. I want to be on the winning side when the Eagles win. And that's the only thing that I want. It's not the thrill of winning. It's seeing the team that I've... This is my whole life that I've put into
this. So what
this.
You're saying, though, Joe, is that the longer the wait, the sweeter the victory. So the longer you're a loser, the better it is when you're finally a winner. That it's no fun having someone who wins it every other year.
Oh, I could go for a win every other year. I mean, you know, I could go for, like, up in Boston where people always moan about how the Red Sox never win. Well, the Celtics won 16 championships. I'd take half of those. The Sixers have only won 3 in their entire history. So, no, I don't think that there's anything rewarding about defeat, and I don't buy into this lovable loser thing. I would like it if my team won every year. I would like it if my team won any year.
Alan Barra, the Cubs mythology is something about the lovable loser, though, isn't it?
Oh, they have played off that for years, and it's really shameful. I think it's disgraceful. The Red Sox have made efforts to win. Misguided efforts, I think, getting a lot of players that they shouldn't have gotten, making a lot of bad decisions. The Cubs are just a disgrace. I mean, the Cubs have played this, we only play in a small stadium. They play in a huge market up in Chicago. We only have a small TV network. We're not nearly as big as the Atlanta Braves. Come on, the Cubs have one of the biggest TV markets in the country. All through the South and Midwest, their games are broadcast. They have never, until the last couple of seasons, made the effort to put together to build a structure that would produce.
Your mother is a Cubs fan, isn't she, Alan?
Oh, heck yes. I hope she's listening now. She's really living and dying with this.
And she's not living in Chicago,
is she?
She
lives in Alabama.
Yeah.
No, she lives in Alabama. And a couple of years ago, I was down in the Ole Miss campus down in Oxford, Mississippi. There's Cubs caps everywhere. During the day, the students would, loaf around, and instead of studying, they'd be watching the Cubs games. Those games are all over the place.
So it's not about your address.
That, you know, our network's only one-third as big as the Braves. That's ridiculous, you know.
It's not about where you live, then. It doesn't have anything to do with that.
Well, not necessarily, no. But I'm saying there's a lot of people, like my mother. My mother doesn't root for the Braves. She hates the Braves, even though they're the relatively speaking, the local team. She's a loyal Cubs fan. That's her team. That's her baseball team, and it has been for more than 25 years. So, in that sense, she's as loyal as anybody on the north or south side of Chicago. I mean, she's a Cubs fan. So you can become a fan in a lot of different ways. You don't necessarily have to root for your local team.
But Joe Queenan, if there's a Phillies fan in San Francisco, is that person as pure as a Phillies fan living in Philadelphia?
It doesn't make any sense to be a Phillies fan in San Francisco unless you grew up in the city. And the reason is, if you let's say you're that Phillies fan in San Francisco and the Phillies win the World Series, who do you celebrate that with? Who do you honk your car alone who do you share it with? The whole point of supporting these teams, as you see just about anywhere, but particularly in college football in the South, is there's this glue that binds these people together, and it's usually a municipal glue, but, you know, it can also be statewide, or it can be because you went to that particular college, but it has to be something that you share. What's the point of being a guy who grows up in New Jersey and who roots for the Indianapolis Colts? Like my nephew grew up in Harrisburg. He roots for the Indianapolis Colts. He roots for the Los Angeles Lakers. He roots for the New Jersey Devils. Who do you share any of this with? I mean, at least, you know, in Sunday's game when the Eagles were playing Buffalo, the network broke away from the game 1 second before Brian Westbrook ripped off a 62-yard run to win the game. So I immediately was on the phone to my best friend in Philadelphia so that he could give me the play-by-play on the game. Does the guy in San Francisco who has some mysterious affection for the Philadelphia Phillies have that experience? No.
All right, Connection listeners, so this notion of devotion is something that has to do with sharing it with other people, something like Robin Williams and Matt Damon in Good Will Hunting. And we should keep in mind that they're celebrating here a Red Sox losing effort rather than World Series victory.
Bottom of the 12th, in stepped Carlton Fisk. All pudge.
Steps up to the plate, you know, he's got that whiz stand.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he clocks it, you know. High, fly ball on the left field line. 35,000 people on their feet, yelling at the ball. But that's not because Fisk, he's waving at the ball like a madman.
Yeah,
he's going, get over, get over, get over. And then it hits a foul pole, and 35,000 fans, you know, they charge the field, you know.
Yeah. Did you rush the field?
No, I didn't rush the field. I wasn't there.
What?
No, I was in a bar having a drink with my future wife.
Good Will Hunting. Let's go back to Alan Bear and Joe Queenan here. And Alan, when we put the Sox fan, Red Sox fans and the Cubs fans in the same little crucible here, there is a kind of a Catholic love of losing case that you make. Can you explain that?
Oh, I think there's a lot of Catholic guilt associated with the Red Sox. I don't think the Cubs, it's quite the same thing. There's some evidence that God doesn't particularly like the Red Sox. The Cubs are more like the team that got ignored. It's like he forgot about the Cubs for a century or so. It's not quite the same thing.
But when we try to figure out why it is that the fans stick with both those two teams. There's something about the good side of suffering, isn't there, that will, I don't know, lessen their time in purgatory?
That's what I wrote some time ago. I got a lot of nasty letters on that.
Would you like to get some more of those letters or not?
I'll have send them to you.
All right, just
forward
them on.
I don't want to get any more of those. I don't give my email address out either.
I promise.
That was my theory, that being a Red Sox fan, if you're Catholic, it would actually lessen your time in purgatory. You're a Red Sox fan for, say, 50 years. I think it gets you off like 5 centuries out of a purgatory when you die.
But I don't believe that. I believe that the problem simply is, if you grew up in Boston and you're any kind of human being, you're going to root for the Red Sox. You were never given any other option. You have to root for the Red Sox or you're a very bad person. So you just don't have a choice, but it doesn't mean that you love losing. I mean, the difference between Wrigley Field and Fenway Park is astonishing. If you go to Wrigley Field most of the time, first of all, half the crowd there is from Iowa or from Florida. Or, you know, if you ask for directions anywhere, you can't get them because it's a tourist attraction. And people just go out there to have a nice time in Chicago and on a sunny day. And the mood there is pretty nice. You go to Fenway Park, that's a nasty crowd. That's a nasty, brooding, angry crowd of people. I feel right at home there, being from Philadelphia. But it is nothing like, I mean, it is basically 34,000 angry white men who are tired of losing. And it's totally different from the atmosphere at Wrigley Field.
Yes. Yeah, so, all right, take it a little bit further then. When you talk about why it's important to be a fan of a team like that, is it to be a part of that crowd? Is it to back those athletes? Is it to somehow back that team or just to sit in that ballpark?
Well, who wants to sit at home when your team loses? You want to share that with somebody. There's something, it's sort of misery loves company. What else can you be if you're a Red Sox fan? You can swear off baseball and just not go to baseball games. But, I mean, let's face it. If you're a Red Sox fan, you have to find some way to deal with it, don't you? What else can you do?
Which is dealing with it with a large group of other suffering people.
Other people.
You know, when you go to a game, this is particularly true of football, but also baseball. You go to a game and there's 60,000 people there. So let's say I'm from Philadelphia, but I live in New York. So I go to the Meadowlands on a Monday night. There's 60,000 people rooting for the Giants. Everybody's drunk. Everybody's wearing blue. Everybody's obnoxious. And you go, wow, I hate these guys. These guys are white trash animals. They're the worst people. Then you go to Philly and everybody's wearing green and they're all drunk and they're all obnoxious and they're all really nasty. And you go, these are my kinsmen. These are my bros. This is great. It's great to be back home. And that's what I don't understand about the front runner is you don't get that. How, if you're growing up in one place and you're rooting for a team from the other place, how can you ever have that experience of being there with 60,000 people cheering at the same time? That's what I don't understand about the front runner.
Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Do you cheer for a front runner? Do you seek one out? Or are you determined to stick with the other side?
I'm a loser, and I'm not what I appear to be. What have I done to deserve such a fate? I realize I have left it too late. Before a fall, I'm telling you so that you won't lose all. I'm a loser.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio, and we're trying to avoid those great, long, wordy sports sociologist studies about what it is that people actually are motivated by when they support a team. But we do kind of want to understand a little bit about why it is people stick with losing teams. 1-800-423-8255. Two of the country's top sports writers with us on the program, Joe Queenan and Alan Barra. Let's go to Boston. Boston for our first call. Constantine's joining us. Hi there.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
I just wanted to claim a special place in the accursed sports pantheon. I was born in Chicago and lived there until the age of 9, and I was a Cubs fan, and then moved to New England, became a Red Sox fan. So I have rooted for both teams for my entire life. And I just wanted to say that the great thing and the only great thing about rooting for those two teams is it teaches you a sense of irony for life.
Haven't you, though, somehow destroyed or attacked your own heritage by rooting for a Boston team?
I felt totally adulterous as a young child. I knew I was cheating on Ernie Banks. I was like, it felt wrong, but I, you know, I was nine and it was, you know, it was the early 70s. They were wild and crazy times.
It was the me generation,
I know. It was.
Joe Queenan, and talk to Constantine here.
You know, moving from Chicago to Boston is sort of like moving from Afghanistan to Iraq.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the cities are great and they have great other sports like football and basketball. But as a sports fan, boy, you couldn't have made a worse choice. I mean, it's just, it's a nightmare. And I take my hat off to you because I only have to root for one appalling team. Although I must say, whenever this conversation comes up about how bad the Cubs and the Red Sox are, the Cubs haven't won the World Series since 1908, but I think they've won 10 pennants. The Red Sox frequently have contended for the World Series. The Phillies have only won one World Series. They are, without a doubt, and it can be proven statistically, the worst franchise in the history of professional sports.
You're jealous. So, you're jealous that you're not getting the ink for having such a rotten team.
Well,
I'm sorry that the Phillies won in 1980 because then the Phillies would have the – you know, it's interesting what happens. When the Rangers went 54 years without winning a Stanley Cup, they were interesting. As soon as they won a Stanley Cup, they just went back to being another uninteresting hockey team.
Well, the fans, so if you the, have to,
go ahead, Constantine.
The fans, you have to feel actually a certain amount of sympathy for, and I would, were they not the other team in Chicago, or the White Sox fans. It's, I think 1917 was, or 1919, I forget, was the last, yeah, 1919, the Black Sox scandal was the last time
they won.
We all
know what happened then.
And there's no myth about the White Sox. There's
right.
no, you know, they're just, you know, they played for the cheapest owners for, you know, whatever, 84 years or something, you know, but they don't even get that consolation of myth to go with it.
Go ahead, Adam.
Right. I was going to say, there's kind of a feeling around the White Sox that they kind of got what was coming to them because, you know, the players agreed to fix the series, and the owner was such a tightwad and ought to be kicked out of the Hall of Fame himself. So he has a very good point there. And you could extend that to a lot of teams around the country. There's so many writers and so many sports writers from the East Coast and from the Boston area, so you read so much about the Red Sox. Go to any bookstore anywhere in the country, to a Barnes & Noble or Borders or something, and you see all these books on the Red Sox in Seattle. You don't go to a bookstore, and there's half a dozen books about the Red Sox misery.
Part of being a part of a good story, though. I mean,
What about teams, for instance? I mean, didn't the California Angels have some sort of mythology as losers before last year? What about Donnie Moore? I mean, look at the team that who does he give up that home run to? The Red Sox back in 86. I mean, there's people out there that care passionately about their teams, too. The Houston Astros. Look at no one even remembers their heartbreaking losses in 1980 to the Phillies. In 1986 to the Mets. I mean, who writes books about the Houston Astros?
I think that's a very good point. You know, the Astros in 1980 had a 5-2 lead in the ninth inning with Nolan Ryan on the mound, and there was a double play ball hit to him, and he couldn't handle it, and they ended up losing the pennant. And in 1986, they lost. They were involved in probably the two greatest playoffs in the history of the National League, but because they're the Houston Astros, nobody ever talks about it. And I think that a lot of the teams from a lot of the cities around the country do have a legitimate grievance. You just never stop hearing about the Yankees, but you also never stop hearing about the Red Sox and the Cubs.
Let's say thanks to Constantine for joining us and switch to another line. Now, Michael Field is a friend of the program, an administrator at Boston University who was talked into joining us on the program because, Michael, you too have kind of a split allegiance here, right?
Right. Hello, Dick.
How are you? Michael, you were born into a Cubs family like Constantine. What happened next?
Well, it wasn't exactly that. I grew up in the Chicago area, but my father was a White Sox fan, and try as I might, I just couldn't do it.
So
I became a Cubs fan.
So you're already taking on adversity as a very small child.
Yes. And in fact, that's where I learned about the Yankees.
And we didn't like them, right?
Well, it's one of the interesting characterizations of Red Sox fans is this Yankee phobia that they have.
All right, so who are you rooting for now?
Right now, I'm rooting for the Cubs and the Red Sox.
And who do you love more?
Well, you know, it's interesting. They never play each other, and were they to meet, I'm afraid I'd probably be for the Cubs because that's my roots. I've only been in Boston for 13 years.
Yeah, Joe Queen, and what's the likelihood of those two ever meeting in a World Series?
Zero, I would think. And neither one would win. But I do think that and the reason I say zero is because really nice things don't happen to people on this planet. Because what everybody would like, except for Yankees fans who just never get tired of winning, but the average American would like nothing better than a Cubs-Red Sox World Series. And Fox would like that, too, because there'd be 175 million people would watch that series. The Cubs would win, of course, because after the Buckner play, I saw the Buckner play, and I just thought, there is a curse. They'll never win. If they can't win this, they never will win. But that's what fans would love, the Cubs-Red Sox series that everybody could get excited about. And it's not going to happen. We're never going to see it.
What's the difference, Michael, between a Red Sox fan and a Cubs fan?
Oh, the Red Sox fans have much higher expectations, I think, because the Red Sox are actually a good team. Growing up watching the Cubs were always in the lower half of the league. Even their radio announcers defined a successful season by how close they were to breaking even on wins and losses. You'd hear, oh, they're only two games below 500. And that kind of talk doesn't exist in Boston because the Red Sox field a pretty good team most years.
Now, you know what Joe Queenan said at the beginning of the program, Michael? He said that anyone who switches allegiances has no moral fiber at all, that you just don't do that.
That's right.
So?
So it is still possible to support, as Joe Queenan said, the Phillies and the Eagles, or in my case, since there are two leagues in baseball, the Cubs and the Red Sox, because they never meet.
Alan Barrett, can we accept that parsing of loyalty?
I'm totally without moral fiber. I'm a Yankees fan. So, you know, I think that we have to allow, though, there's all kinds of reasons why somebody can become a fan. If you grew up in San Francisco, say, in the 30s and 40s, I could easily see how you could be a Yankees fan because of Joe DiMaggio or the DiMaggio brothers, or a Red Sox fan because of Dom DiMaggio or whatever, and not be a fan necessarily of the San Francisco Giants. I think also you have to kind of make a split here between baseball and other sports, particularly football. There's a whole generation, maybe now close to two generations, of fans football fans that have grown up. Most of them have never seen a football game live. I mean, baseball you go to see. You become a fan of the Red Sox or Cubs or any team by going to see the games. Right. You use television to keep up with the team, but that's not your primary connection with it. How many football fans do you know have ever been to an NFL game? I think people that if you were living, say, in St. Louis when the football Cardinals were there and losing every year, and you never went to the games, and suddenly you started seeing the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders and the Cowboys promoting themselves as America's team, I think it's very easy to imagine somebody growing up in St. Louis as a Cowboys fan. In fact, I think that's largely what happened with pro football in the 60s and 70s. And I think now two generations of football fans have grown up that way, and I think many of them probably don't even know what we're talking about. So I guess most football fans have never seen their team play live.
When I was growing up in Philadelphia, if you rooted for any team but the Phillies and the Eagles, you would have been decapitated. And I totally approve of that policy. I had a friend when I was growing up who used to wear a Dodgers cap. This was in the early 60s when the Dodgers had Sandy Koufax and were winning World Series, and I had to protect him. Otherwise, he would have, you know, they just would have been dragging the lake for his body because this feeling was so strong in the city. You only vote Democratic, and you only root for the local teams.
All right.
But if you were Jewish and Sandy Koufax was pitching,
you rooted for the Phillies.
I don't know.
Very bad people switch allegiances. I'm sticking with my belief.
Okay, Michael Field, you're sort of half under the umbrella of very bad people there, but I want to thank
you. No, he's not. He's absolutely right.
What do you mean? He switched allegiances. He was a Chicago Cubs fan. Now he's a Red Sox fan. You can't have it both ways, Joe.
Oh, but, Dick, there's no switch. I have it both ways.
Yeah?
Yeah, I support both teams, and I'm...
I could say I support five teams, and that doesn't make me any better, does it?
But you asked me who I would root for in the unlikely event they ever met, and I'd have to go back to the Cubs.
Okay. All right. So as long as you sort of stick with the one who brought you, then, Joe, can we give Michael a pass on this one?
It's different for people who move from different cities or who because especially if they're – you can't root for two teams in the same league. You can't root for the Yankees and the Red Sox.
Okay.
You can't root for the Israelis and the Palestinians. You got to make up your mind.
Gotcha. Yeah. Thank you, Michael. 1-800-423-8255 to Raleigh, North Carolina now. And Sean's joining us. Hi, Sean.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Well, I wanted to make a comment. I'm a Philadelphia fan. Sixer, you know, I'm a Sixer crazy fanatic. The problem with this is that, you know, year after year, and there I do feel some guilt because I do have somewhat of a winning team. They always kind of dangle that, you know, championship in front of us and then pull the carpet out. I feel like a gambler who always almost gets blackjack and just plays all night to try and, you know, meet that point.
Sean, are you originally from the Philly area?
Well, I was actually born in Detroit, and I moved to Philadelphia when I was 8. So I was raised in a community. My mother is a diehard Piston fan, Lion fan, Tiger fan. I actually drove down Michigan Avenue in 84 with my mom while people were running over cars and they won the championship. So I have some memories of a championship. Now, you know, in Philadelphia, you know, I was raised in an area where, you know, we always played outside street hockey, and our little area played against other little areas in our neighborhood in Roxborough, and loyalty was everything. Like, you were loyal to your friends. You were loyal to your little local.
Well, you were all Flyers players or what?
Well, no, we just played for our street, and so we were incredibly loyal to our street. And I think as I got older, that kind of dedication and loyalty just kind of came along with me, that diehard mentality where you don't stray from your boys. Those are your buddies. Those are your, you know, representatives of who you are.
So the reason I ask you is I wanted to move you to Raleigh now and ask you in context of what we were saying earlier in the program, what do you do when the Sixers are playing now? Who are you standing up and cheering with? Does that matter?
Oh, well, I brought my fiance on board. You know, that kind of fanaticism is hard to not be contagious to people who are around you. And, I always have a phone. My mom is such a fan, and my friends are fans. My roommate, Sam, he's a fan, and so basically what happens is if they win, I get on the horn right away. Or if they lose, I get on the phone and call my mom, and we talk for hours about what could have happened and what went wrong. And there's home in that. You know, there's that I always feel at home with my players, whether they win or lose. And my mom goes over the top of it. She sees it as sports, especially baseball, as a metaphor for life and all this stuff. And so she's a great fan to talk to and speak with about these things.
Alan, Joe, join us here.
Well, there wasn't actually a question in there, but there was actually one good point where he said we play for our neighborhood. And I think that's something that's something that I noticed when I moved from Philadelphia to New York was that in Philadelphia, everything is local, and it's not just, it's your local high school. And when my mother asks somebody where they're from, she asks what parish they're from. Are you from, All Saints, or are you from St. Catharines? And of course, if you're asking somebody named Sokoloff or Weiss, they don't have any idea what you're talking about. But there's this real sense of localness, and I think that's true in Chicago. I think it's true in Boston. It's not so much true in New York because there's so much going on. And one of the things that's really noticeable here is because the Yankees have had so much success, you see so many Yankees caps of very recent vintage. And because I've lived here for 25 years, I can remember when this was a Mets town. In the 80s, when the Yankees were mediocre to bad, you didn't see very many Yankees fans, and you didn't hear very many Yankees fans. When Carter and those guys, Keith Hernandez, this was a Mets town. And that's something that probably is unique in America. You in Chicago, you don't see the city switch from Chicago, from the White Sox to the Cubs. There's a north-south divide there. There's lots of White Sox fans. It's evenly divided, and the fans don't switch allegiances. But in New York, you see it much more.
Alan, are you getting your own devotion called into question here? As a Yankees fan?
My own devotion?
Yeah.
No, Yankees fans are above the kind of things that we're talking about here. We don't hate other people. We're above all that.
Yeah,
like I tell
to,
my daughter.
Right?
Yeah, right. I tell my daughter on New York subways, always be kind to give your seat to unfortunate people, the elderly, crippled people with Mets caps. You know, you can afford to be benevolent. But let me say that I think sometimes you can be a fan of the game. I don't root for the Mets, but I did feel happy the years like a 69 and an 86. I did get caught up in what my friends got caught up in. I would not have chosen for the Mets to win those years, but once they did, let's face it, once they're in the series, you can be a fan for a lot of reasons. I was not rooting for the California Angels to beat the Yankees last year, but once they got in the series, I mean, come on, you want to see those people out there go crazy. You want to see other people experience what you've experienced. And I get caught up, but every year I can find a reason, I think, to root for somebody out there. I don't necessarily have to be. I mean, for instance, this year, I'm rooting hard for the Cubs to win the National League pennant because of my mom and my family back in Alabama. They're all Cubs fans. You can find a way to you can get something out of it every year. You can find a way to experience vicarious thrills.
I don't think you can get something out of it if the Marlins win the pennant. If the Marlins are in the World Series against the Minnesota Twins, I'm going fishing, and I don't even fish.
Why? What's wrong with the Marlins? Somebody out there somewhere is a fan of the Marlins.
Because here's you get to the point about the expansion, which is so bad, is that the expansion has been to very, very small markets, like in Arizona and down in Florida. And the number of people who benefit from the Florida Marlins or the Arizona Diamondbacks winning anything is minuscule. It's also true of the New Jersey Devils, who have no fans, and the San Antonio Spurs. I would like to see these sports only in major markets, because the people who most deserve to feel the exhilaration of victory are the people who live in the largely unlivable major cities of America. There has to be some kind of payoff for what we have to endure.
Don't take that point of view to Columbus, Ohio. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners trying to figure out what's behind the fan. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. I'm Dick Gordon. Joe Queenan and Alan Barra have been talking a little bit about the mythology of the game of baseball being central in so many ways to why people become devoted to a team, become fans of a particular team. Let's go back, way back, when Babe Ruth was a New York Yankee. I know I'm not supposed to say that, sitting in a Boston studio, facing the Chicago Cubs pitcher Charlie Root, Wrigley Field, October 1, 1932. It's the fifth inning of the third game of the World Series. And remember that pointing arm.
And now Babe Ruth is turning out towards center field, and he's yelling at the Cubs that the next pitch over is going out in the center field. Now he's looking toward the stand. And here's the pitch to Collins, ball two and strike two. It's coming, Babe Ruth connects, and there it goes. The ball is going, going, going.
Well, I stepped out of the box, and by that time, they were over there going crazy. Well, I looked down at center field, and I tore it. I said, I'm going to hit the next pitch ball right past the flagpole. Well, the good Lord must have been with me.
1-800-423-8255. The good Lord was with Babe on that day in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hugh is, I think, a Red Sox fan, Hugh?
I was up until 2:47 in the morning, night before last, watching one of the most agonizing losses I've ever sat through. But I watched every pitch.
Why?
Well, when I was a child, I actually was a Yankee fan. So I'm one of these switchers, but I view the switch in this case as a sign of maturity.
Go on.
Well, you know, it says in the Bible, when I was a child, I spake as a child and I thought as a child. I think switching over to being a Red Sox fan was really a sign that I was becoming a grown-up. It kind of goes back to what one of the early callers, Lee Constantine, had to say about Red Sox fans, I think, have confronted some existential truths that Yankee fans don't have to deal with. The fact that there's more defeats than victories in life, and that somewhere along the way you learn that long-term loyalty is a lot more important than some kind of transient glory.
Well, wait a second. What happened to the long-term loyalty to the Yankees?
Well, again, I think what happened was the Navy sent me to Boston for a term in the late 60s and early 70s. I went to Fenway Park, and I fell in love, both literally and figuratively, with the park and the atmosphere. But also, I met the woman who became my wife in Boston, and I used to take her on cheap dates and sit in the bleachers at
so
Fenway
she was
Park.
Always already a Red Sox fan, right?
No, she's from Chicago. She's a Cubs fan. So I'm
Can you go through this again?
We'll replay the tape.
Now, she, but she's a baseball fan because she grew up on the north side of Chicago. So Cubs fans and Red Sox fans share a lot in common, as you've already discussed. So we got along famously and always have. And
the thrill of being united in some kind of hopeless cause.
No, it's not really hopeless. It's really a recognition that sometimes the journey is more important than the destination, and that, you know, being a fan and being able to deal with these vicissitudes, I mean, it's hard to explain, but every time I meet somebody, if I'm traveling in the U.S. or abroad and they have on a Red Sox cap, I know we can sit down over a cup of coffee and have a nice conversation because we're going to be on the same wavelength about a lot of things.
I have not had that experience, and part of it is because the Phillies do not have any kind of mythology other than that they always lose. But if you see somebody wearing a Phillies cap in the streets of America, it's almost always a gang member because the red P replaced the socks as kind of gang style. And I don't have a whole lot in common with, you know, teenage guys and gangs. So I can't walk up to them and say, hey, let's have a cup of coffee, because they don't want to have a cup of coffee with a middle-aged guy. But I would say this about, first of all, I think it's admirable but rather sad that anyone would switch from being a Yankees fan to a Red Sox fan. And it shows you basically that human beings are beyond salvation, that given the opportunity, we're always going to make the wrong decision. But it's something that I think about all the time, because my children were born in New York, and I have always told my children, you are free to root for the New York teams. I would prefer that you root for the Yankees than the Mets, but you're free to root for the New York teams, and they don't. My daughter roots for the Flyers, isn't interested in the other teams. My son wants to go to school in Philadelphia just so he can be near the Eagles, and he doesn't care where he goes to college. And I think these are bad decisions. I think that, you know, that it would make more sense to root for the New York team since you grew up here and since I've given you my moral blessing.
Well, no, wait a minute. Full disclosure here, Joe. You're the one who insists that your son sit in this certain chair on this certain Sunday as some kind of good luck charm in an Eagles game.
It's true. But I have at least philosophically laid open the possibility. There's a kind of legal avenue, very narrow here, where he could slip through and he could root for the Rangers and he could root for the Yankees, and he doesn't do it. And
he just has to pay for his own college education.
Exactly.
Right?
But it just suggests to me that there's something about human nature that, given the choice between the straight and narrow path that leads to salvation and the path into the forest that leads to death and dysentery, that you make the wrong choice, unless you're Alan Barra.
I just had an image. I've got to get this out of my head. The last caller talked about two Red Sox fans sitting down together having a cup of coffee. And I thought, what kind of place would that be? And there's a Leslie Nielsen movie, one of those Naked Gun movies, where he's nursing his blues. They're in a club where people go to be miserable. And the camera pans on the wall, and there's a picture of the Hindenburg exploding. There's a picture of the Titanic going down. All these great disasters. Then there's a picture of Michael Dukakis, by the way.
And a picture of Bill Buckner.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, what would a Red Sox place be where you go? Red Sox fans would go. Be a picture of Bill Buckner, you know, there's Babe Ruth.
You know, but it'd be a nice warm place called Murphy's. Give me a break.
But you know, there is this thing that people talk about how rooting for the Red Sox or rooting for the Cubs or rooting for the Buffalo Bills prepares you better for life because life is filled with reverses and misfortunes. I must say, in my life has worked out better than my teams have worked out. I mean, I've Thank actually God. Found that I actually achieve more victories than the Eagles or the Phillies do. I mean, if I had only achieved one thing in 120 years, I would have packed it in a long time
ago. I think Harold Stassen probably achieved more victories than the...
I want to move along here to Providence, Rhode Island, and Linda's joining us. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I wanted to point out that even though I am a Yankees fan, I have extreme guilt because I feel badly that my team happens to win all the time and that the people that root for them may be those people that are on the bandwagon rooting for them because they're winning.
It's tough, Linda, isn't it? I mean, it's tough. You have to get up every morning feeling you're oppressing everyone else in baseball.
But what I have to say people laugh at me and they say, oh, you know, you just like the Yankees. But I like how they play the game. You know, it's the way, it's like it chooses you. I didn't choose the Yankees. I went to Mets
Good
team
point.
First and it didn't speak to me. I went to the Yankees and I said, these are my people.
Tom Cruise, if you'd gone to the Yankees between 1965 and 1970, they wouldn't have been your people because they lost like 95 games every year. I think you almost always can go back and find that people become fans of a particular team because the team was winning. It's very, very unusual for people to become fans of a team when they're losing. But I would say that this is very similar to the problem that Tom Cruise and Julia Roberts have. They wake up every day, look in the mirror and say, I feel so guilty because I look so good and my teeth are so great. And it is a problem, but it's a problem you're going to have a hard time getting very many people to sympathize with.
Well,
like my daughter said...
I take umbrage with that.
Go on.
I do.
Well, you've won 26 championships, so you can take all the umbrage you want.
I feel bad about that, and I do, I share her guilt, but you know what? I can live with it.
Yes, he says ironically.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to another Linda who's joining us now from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Dick. Great show.
Red Sox fan?
Avid Red Sox fan.
All your life?
No, I grew up in upstate New York. I came here in the late 80s to study theology at Harvard. And one year I went to Fenway, and I was immediately smitten with the magic, the community spirit. And to deal with my Red Sox angst, I have written a song called Could This Be the Year? And I sing it whether they're winning or losing.
And it goes sort of like what?
Well, it's sort of in the genre of a show tune. Would you like me to sing a couple verses?
Yeah, sure.
It actually has four verses. I guess you can tell me when to stop.
Well, we'll just... cut the phone line, but go ahead
you
and start.
You can stop now.
Here goes. Could this be the time? Could this be the year? Could this be the moment when our vision comes clear? The dream of a lifetime finally fulfilled. Could this be the season the Red Sox have willed? Could this be the team? Could these be our guys? Could they be the heroes who light up the skies with home runs and shutouts to thrill our cheers? Could this be the season? Oh, let this be the year.
You're going to have to stop, Linda.
You're going to have to stop. Okay.
That song will always be in fashion.
Can I sing something?
Yes, please do.
Fly, Eagles, fly, all the way to victory. Fly, Eagles, fly, score a touchdown, 1, 2, 3. Hit 'em low, hit 'em high, but watch our Eagles fly, 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 Eagles, fly, all the way to victory.
Now, do I get equal time here? Can
I
say something?
Give Alan a chance.
Start spreading the news. All right, that's all. I'm dropping it.
The program has
Linda. I mean,
the program has gone completely off the rails. get control of this program.
Hey,
I don't like where it's headed.
You know the good thing about that Red Sox song?
Yes.
It'll always be in fashion.
Yeah, well, I figured
every year it'll
really
be fresh
fun.
Again because you know.
You know, I woke up this morning and listened to a radio reporter and this morning in Boston saying, down two, but they were here before in 1999.
Can I suggest a slight verse change? Instead of could this be the year, could this be the millennium?
Here's the scariest question of all, though, and I'm really puzzled by this. Do fans matter? At all. I mean, you talk about getting together with 10 or 20,000 people in the rain, in a stadium, backing a losing team. And does it matter to the team?
In what way do you mean does it matter? Did it matter to Walter O'Malley that the Brooklyn Dodgers had such a fanatic following when he moved the team to Los Angeles? No, it doesn't matter to the people that own the teams at all.
So I mean, to be a fan has got to mean that you need to believe that by cheering one hit, the next batter is going to hit or try a little bit harder, and the next one after that. That's part of what being a fan is all about, isn't it? Encouraging the team as they play.
You can have an influence on the team in a particular game, in a particular sport. I think you can have more influence at a basketball game than you can at the other sports. I think that the players basically have the ability to shut the fans out. I remember I was in San Francisco earlier this year, and someone was asking me what I thought of the Oakland Raiders fans who dress themselves in black and who call their stadium the Black Hole. And I thought, yeah, I bet guys like Ray Lewis, I bet guys in the NFL are really scared of about a bunch of fat, middle-aged, drunken white guys coming out and painting their faces black. I bet you professional football players, the scariest guys in the world, are really scared of those guys and don't want to play in Oakland. I think that the fans overestimate their influence, and certainly the owners and the players, I don't think, really care very much about the fans. But there's a thrill about participating in something with another group of people that that isn't like any other experience that you can have. I mean, the closest that you can come is if you go to a rock concert. But if you go to a concert like I'm going to see Springsteen tonight, he's not going to lose. He's not going to fumble. He's not going to let the ball go through his legs. So you pretty much know in advance what experience you're going to come away with. But when you go to a sporting event, it's one of the few things in this society that isn't completely scripted. Maybe the Yankees will lose.
Maybe the Red Sox will win.
We'll no.
No. Okay, sorry. Joe, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Joe's author of True Believers, The Tragic Inner Life of Sports Fans. Alan Barrow, nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
Alan is author of Clearing the Bases, The Greatest Baseball Debates of the Last Century. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
To dream the impossible dream. To fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with